Alright, so bonus points if anybody can tell me what book this is from.
What?
First Room was song.
It's not from a Bible, it's from a book.
1,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Tale of Two Cities.
The Lord of the Flies.
So
Charles Dickens.
First Room
was The Hunger
Games.
The Bible.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, you know what this is?
Yeah,
what
it?
Yes. Alright. It's one of the great beginnings of all novels is A Tale of Two Cities by the great Charles Dickens. And it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, and it goes all the way down. All right. So we're going to cover 1 Samuel 2 and try to finish the chapter. We covered Hannah's prayer last week, and we're going to finish chapter 2. So on that theme, we have A Tale of Two Families. I see what I did there. I see what I did. English major, I told you. So you've got two stories here. You've got the tragic story of Hophni and Phinehas and Eli as well, which shows us how serious God takes priestly misconduct. You know, if you are serving the Lord, you follow the rules. Okay? There is major consequences for those that don't do that. And then we've got this amazing story of Elkanah and Hannah. And Samuel, which shows God's faithfulness in fulfilling promises and blessing, you know, above and beyond what Hannah can even imagine. So here's what I was thinking. It was kind of like, you know, I used to watch Pee-wee's Playhouse when I was a kid. And Pee-wee always had a word of the day. And anytime anybody said the word of the day, everybody had to scream. And so we're not going to quite do that. But what I figured was, yeah, exactly. Everybody would be like, the word of the day would be like construction. And somebody would say construction, and all the people would be like, ah! It was great. Really highbrow intellectual show.
Okay?
So,
what?
Mechaleka hi, mecha hiney ho.
Yeah, that's the word.
If you don't know what that means, then you're missing it. That's what Jambi said. All right. So, on that note, not a scream kind of thing, but what I was thinking is to keep you paying attention and to make sure you know what's going on is every time we hear Samuel, we want to cheer because he's a good guy. And then every time we hear Hophni and Phinehas, we want to boo because those guys are terrible. So every time you hear Samuel,
yeah!
All of you are Eli, right? And every time you hear Hophni and Phinehas, yes, that's what I want to see. So, and in case you need any help, this is kind of how it goes, okay? Samuel is the good guys.
Yeah!
And Hophni and Phinehas are the uncomfortably close bad guys. And Mr. Vaughn's not even paying attention right now, and he should be seeing this.
Okay?
Good guys, bad guys, just so you know.
You can't take the loss, you just can't.
Hey, if you're comfortable with that picture, fine.
Hey, I'm extremely comfortable with that picture.
All right, so.
Talk to me at the end of the year when we get one more super.
That's cute.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Hey, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
So, we've got... All right, enough football.
They have the best card in the NFL.
Back to what we're doing. All right. So we'll take this a little piece at a time. And we've got five parts, and part one is about Hophni and Phinehas.
Yeah!
All right, and then we got to stop the boo. All right, good.
Sorry.
All right. So, let's check out 12 through 17. It'd be probably better to read in your Bible, but I've got it up there just in case somebody's lazy and heathen and backslidden and didn't bring their Bible. All right, so did I just offend half the room? All right.
I'm sorry.
All right, verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. If you've got another translation, it might say wicked men. Literally means they are sons of Belial. That's what it says. So they were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. The custom of the priests with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand, and he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, and all that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. This is what they did at Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Moreover, before the fat was burned, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, "Give meat for the priest to roast, for he will not accept boiled meat from you, but only raw." And if the man said to him, "Let them burn the fat first and then take as much as you wish," he would say, "No, you must give it now, and if not, I will take it by force. Thus the sin of the young men was very great in the sight of the Lord, for the men treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. All right, now we don't make sacrifices, so this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us, so we've got to kind of pull all this together. All right, so first of all, again, the sons of Eli were worthless men. They were worthless, which means they were wicked. Number two, they did not know or they had no regard for the Lord. They don't care about God. So if they're wicked and they don't care about God, I think we know enough about Scripture that this is not going to end well for these two guys. All right? This is not the side of the battle that you want to be on. All right? So here's what goes on. And we'll talk about some of this Leviticus stuff in a second. But essentially what would happen is these guys would boil the meat. So they bring their sacrifice to Shiloh to be sacrificed there at the tabernacle. And they would boil the meat, and then the priest would put the fork in there, and whatever came up with the fork, you ever boil or even cook like a pot roast or a roast beef or whatever, right? Yeah. When you put the fork in there, it usually comes apart. Yeah. Right? And you don't, if you pick up the whole roast beef on one fork, it's probably not a real tender piece of meat, right? Okay? So what would happen is they would put the fork in there and pick it up, and a piece of it would come up, and the rest would stay in the pot. And whatever came up, even if it was just, a little piece, that's what went to the priest. Okay? But before all that was supposed to happen, they were supposed to sacrifice all that to the Lord, and then they would take what was left over. All right? And so what they're doing is they're changing the rules on the people. The people come up and try to boil the meat, and they say, no, don't boil it. Give it to us raw. Well, why do they want to do that? Because they want to take off the choicest cut of meat before they go sacrifice it. And then they can cook it up any way you want to. I mean, really, boiled meat, who wants that when you can grill it, I mean, really. There's a lot better ways to eat meat than boiled meat. Okay, so they want it raw so they can take what they want first. And then they're changing Levitical law. They're taking first choice above what God's choice is. And the people know, these people that in Israel who are not exactly, saintly people, even they're like, well, please at least burn the fat off first and then take it. And they're like, nope, and if you don't give it to us, we're going to punch you in the face. Like, they get all bully on them, and we're going to take it from you. So there's an interesting thing going on here, and just keep in mind, our two people, Samuel, and I'll be Phineas, all right? It's a comparison. So this whole chapter, they bring up one and then bring up the other. And bring up one and bring up the other. If we're talking literary, they are foils, right? We put opposites beside each other to make the good look better and the bad look even worse, right? Compared to Samuel, these guys are terrible. Good job. Jordan's on the ball. The rest of y'all were late a second late.
She's trying to step.
All right. So all three of these guys have something in common right now. Yeah, just wait for it. I'm testing. Okay? None of them know the Lord. Now that seems kind of weird, right? I'm saying that Samuel doesn't know the Lord. He doesn't know the Lord yet. He's going to meet the Lord very personally in the next chapter. Okay? Yeah. He's ministering at the temple. He knows who God is. He's serving the Lord, but he doesn't know him yet. Okay? He doesn't know. He's a young kid. He doesn't understand totally what that is. Because remember, he's going to get called. You know that story. Samuel, come in here.
Why are you calling me?
Okay? Not all night if you don't want. But you can. I mean, it's fun. And he comes in and he doesn't know it's the Lord calling him, right? Remember, we'll talk about that next week. But here's the difference. Hophni and Phineas. Short and sweet boo. You can't be booing for 10 seconds. All right. So they're despising the Lord and Samuel. This is going to be a fun recording for somebody to listen to. I'm sorry about it. What's wrong with those people at Berean? Notice this, that there are people out there, and you know this, there are people that are basically morally good people, but they don't know the Lord. And then there are people that are morally wicked people, and they don't know the Lord. That's kind of what we're talking about here. Our guy here is it's kind of like this isn't a perfect comparison, but it's kind of like a Mormon you would meet. Okay. Tony, you said you've been talking to a Mormon lately, right? They're nice people. They're moral. They're pro family. They've got a lot of good things going for them. They're positive in a lot of ways, but they don't know the Lord. That's kind of where we are right here. The other group are the militant atheist group that is trying to wipe God out of the whole equation. So we've got two different types of people here. All right. So, again, we talked about this custom. And my little Hebrew joke, this is not kosher. Hey, this is not okay. Hey, what they're doing is totally different than what's listed in the Torah. It's also totally different than anywhere else in the Old Testament. They're doing something that nobody else has ever done or ever will try to do. And the writer, I think, is trying to tell us two things. Number one, Eli's line's got to come to an end. Hey, this has gone too far, and you're out of here. And then number two, the worship site has to be removed from Shiloh. Now, why does the worship site have to be removed from Shiloh? Why does the tabernacle have to be removed from Shiloh?
Because the prophecy is that
they need the temple.
Okay. Eventually, we've got the idea of a temple. You know why they made that? When they built the tabernacle, they put it looks like a tent, right? It is a tent. You know why they do it that way? Because it was never meant to be permanent. The tabernacle was never meant to be the fulfillment of what Yahweh worship was all about. It was mobile. It was, you know, it's movable. Eventually, what's going to happen is David's going to come into power. And where do we get the Davidic covenant at? What chapter would we go to learn the Davidic covenant?
Second Samuel
chapter 7. Yeah, I did say it. Chapter 7, okay? And in that chapter, that's where David sets his mind to build a temple, right? And of course, God says, you're not going to build it because you're a man of war. You got blood on your hands, but your son is going to build it and all that. So we've got this look at a temple because the Abrahamic covenant, what's the big part of the Abrahamic covenant?
Land,
right? You're going to be in this promised land. And if you're going to be in this promised land, this is God's land. This is God's people. We need God's house in that land. All that stuff has to happen. So it all points forward to other things. Okay? And so, before the fat was burned, right? That's the phrase I want you to kind of focus in on there. Before the fat was burned, the priest servant would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, give meat for the priest to roast. And the guy's doing what he's supposed to be doing, and the servant of the priest comes and says, no, give that to me now. Okay? He's not going to accept boiled meat, only raw. And if the man said to him, let him burn the fat first, and then take it. Like, these guys know what they're doing. Okay, that's fine. I know you guys are corrupt. But at least burn the fat off first. At least give that to God before you take my... Because they know my sacrifice isn't any good if you just take it and eat it. You know, they know that that's a total backward sort of thing. And he would say, no, you must give it now, and if not, I'll take it by force. So their servants must have been pretty, like, buff dudes, because they were out there threatening people, like, if you don't give me that meat, take you out. So the sin of the young man was very great in the sight of the Lord, for the man treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. So if we went back to Leviticus chapter 3, you know, another place you go to your daily devotionals all the time, it says, and from the sacrifice of the peace offering, or the fellowship offering, as a food offering to the Lord, he shall offer the fat covering the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them at the loins, and the long lobe of the liver, that he shall remove the kidneys. Then Aaron's son shall burn it on the altar on top of the burnt offering, which is on the wood. On the fire, it is a food offering with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. Again and again, it says burn the fat first. Okay? You don't, and it's actually illegal. We'll cover it in a second. It's actually illegal for them to even eat the fat. Okay? They can't have, you know, you ever get that? You know, no, of course no bacon. But, you know, when you get, anybody ever get prime rib?
Yes.
Yeah. Prime rib's got a little bit of fat marbled in it. You get a good, you know, ribeye steak, you got some fat marbled in it. If you get a, you know, pretty much any kind of steak outside of a filet, you're gonna have fat marbled in the meat. They can't eat that fat. Okay. Now, if you take meat, you know, it's the same thing. If you get ground beef, and some of you could probably actually cook that, right? You cook some ground beef for like some tacos or something like that, or some sloppy joes or whatever. Well, you know, if you buy a percentage, a lean percentage of the meat, right? 93, 85. 70, you know, whatever you buy. And you notice if you put that in the pan and you cook that ground beef, what do you end up having to do after you cook the meat?
Drain.
Got to drain the fat off of it, because that's what happens when you cook meat. The fat burns out of it. If you had the fattiest piece of meat ever, if you put it on the grill long enough, the fat's eventually going to burn out of it. You may not have much meat left when you're done with it, if it's a bad piece of meat, but the fat burns out of it. So that's the whole point, is the fat is supposed to go to God. Now, you know, you're like, why does God want the fat? I don't know, because he said so. You know, but, yeah, there may be something to that. You know, there may be something to that. And so you know, for us, we don't think about this stuff. Because now, I mean, if you're like me, you don't want a piece of steak that's got a bunch of fat on it. But sometimes those steaks that have a little bit of fat in it, that like hamburgers, you, like 93.7 meat isn't the best for hamburgers. Because you need a little bit of fat in there. You need something. Now, I'm not saying you got to go get the 70%, but the 93 doesn't cook a hamburger great because there's no fat in it. Some, you know, it does some things for cooking. But for them, this was totally different. They never considered that. You know, if you've ever had, you know, if you ever had somebody that cooks that breakfast for you and they fry up the bacon and then you put stuff in the pan with the bacon grease in it, like that's unbelievable, right? They don't do that stuff here. Hey, that doesn't work. They can't eat the fat whatsoever. Okay, so when it says before the fat was burned, Hophni and Phinehas were taking the priestly share of the fellowship offerings before the fat was burned. They're able to take food. They're able to take some of this meat. It's the law. That's what's supposed to happen, is once it's sacrificed, they can take what's left over to feed themselves. What they're doing is they're taking the choice cut first and then sacrificing the leftovers to God. Does that make sense? That's what they're doing. The Lord has not been given his portion, and they're eating first. All right. So they are taking from God. They have contempt for the law. The priests are consuming fat from the sacrificial animals, which is illegal. Okay? They're not allowed to do that. Leviticus chapter 7. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, not just the priests, but the people of Israel. Yep. Yes.
Well, if they're taking the sacrifice, does that mean the guys who are giving them the sacrifice don't get the atonement?
Basically, right? It doesn't. It's, if it's not done properly, then these guys are getting cheated on top of that. You know, so there's a lot of bad things going on here.
Do you think that they had like a reimbursement system?
A reimbursement system? What, to the guys that are giving their meat for the
sacrifice?
I'm guessing no. Yeah, I think this is crooked all the way around.
Yeah.
Right, so look, it says, speak to the people of Israel, not to the priests, but to the people of Israel, saying, you shall eat no fat of ox or sheep or goat. The fat of an animal that dies of itself and the fat of one that is torn by beasts may be put to any other use, but on no account shall you eat it. So if you want to use that fat for, you know, like oils and different, whatever else, yeah, things you can make out of it, fine. You can use it for that, but you don't eat it. Okay? And it says, for every person who eats the fat of an animal of which a food offering may be made to the Lord shall be cut off from his people. It's pretty serious. You know, you eat fat, you're cut off from the people. That's a big deal here. So these guys are breaking all kinds of laws left and right when they do this. Okay? If that weren't enough, that's their little bullying tactic right there. They use a threat of violence. So even the people who gave in to the sinful demands placed on them were more pious than the priests. You know, even these guys that don't know what's going on and are sinners in Israel are more pious than the priests that are supposed to be standing in and interceding for them. Okay? Isn't that the whole purpose of the priests? They're supposed to stand before God on behalf of the people. Yeah. And if they don't do that, then not only are they violating laws themselves, they are forcing the people to violate that law as well. So that's why this is why it's such a big deal. Okay? Because what's at stake here? What else are they affecting by not following the law? If everybody knows they're cheating, what does that do? It's like when you're watching the news and you see these preachers and stuff that are stealing money from their congregations and doing crooked things and all that. What effect does that have?
It ruins the testimony.
Yeah, it ruins the testimony of the people. It affects the church. It affects Christianity. It affects everything, right? It's the the whole Josh Duggar thing. You've seen that story, right? You know, and more stuff just keeps coming out about the guy. Okay, why is that so bad? Well, it's bad for him personally, clearly. But even worse, it's bad for the name of Christ. It's bad for the name of the church. It's bad for the picture of what this is supposed to be. And so it's not just his sin. This is not just these two boys' sins, these two young men's sin. This is affecting everything. It's affecting temple worship. It's affecting the name of the Lord. It's affecting the people of Israel. Because if I'm taking my sacrifice up there every time, and I know they're cheating me, and they're doing it wrong, and they're kind of making a mockery of the system, why am I going to take it up to sacrifice next time? Why do I even believe that these are priests of God? Why, you know, all of a sudden my view of who God is affected by these sorry men. Yeah. It's a good question. These are not atonement offerings. These are peace offerings. But at the same time, if they're not being done properly, they're not effective. They're not efficacious. How about that? Right? Yeah. We came across that in one of my classes this week. I don't know which class it was. Was it English? Yeah. Got it. All right, so what does this have to do with us? Well, I thought if we went to Romans 12, and we see it says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. So we may not go make sacrifices. But what does Paul say we've got going on here? We are what? We're living sacrifices. So how could we make a mockery of this in our own lives?
Putting ourselves first, debauched lives.
Yeah, anything that results from pride that puts us first. We could bring in any kind of debauched lifestyles, right? We could, you name the sin, just name it, right? Because pride brings it all around. Whatever that is, we can make a mockery of this sacrifice, because it's like that Josh Duggar example, or the Jim Baker example, or the whoever it is that's making a mockery of this whole thing. That person is supposed to be representing Christ, and when he decides to put himself before Christ, what does that do? It affects everything. It affects his testimony, affects our testimony, because you've probably heard this before, but if you've ever tried to talk to anybody about church or things like that, they'll say things like, well, you're a bunch of hypocrites, or you churches all do this thing. You know, it's like when all the molestation stuff came out of the Catholic Church. You know, I bet you it was pretty tough to be a Catholic and be like, you should come to Catholic Church, because everybody was like, no, you guys are a bunch of child molesters. You know, now, was that true across the board? No, not every church was doing that, but a few people make that cover the whole church. So when one person does something, it affects all of us. You know, if one of you guys goes, you know, into the building and starts running down the hallway and like cussing your head off, what are they going to say? Those teens out there are disrespectful. They may call you out. They'll be like, Zach was being a jerk, but they'll, but I'm just using an example. I mean, yeah. You wouldn't push up, so he got mad. But they would. What? That's you do that, right? I've been to some soccer games this year. I've seen. You're angry, so but you kept those words inside, so it was good. But if somebody did that, if one of you did that, it would reflect on the entire youth group. If one of you stole something, if two of you got in a fight out in the parking lot, I guarantee you the whole youth group would have consequences because two people did that. Right? Yeah.
We got Jericho.
Yeah. Yeah, one guy. Yeah. One guy disobeys, and the whole place loses, 30 guys die or something in the battle because of that. Yeah. I think that's one part we can grab here, is the sins that you commit are not just about you. You may think that's the case, okay? And in many cases, people don't know about your sin. They don't know you've done this or said this or acted out this way. But eventually, that can affect other people, especially if you are claiming Christ, right? So let's be very aware of that. So we may not go take our sacrifices. We're not Levitical priests, but we are a holy priesthood. You know, we are still doing sacrifices. We're just the sacrifice. We are to sacrifice ourselves, and in the same way, God has to be first. If we're first, it's broken. Okay? So part two, the Lord is going to bless Samuel and his family. Yeah. It's kind of a delayed reaction on this side. All right. So, let's read 18 through 21. You don't have to cheer when we're reading the scripture.
Wait,
what is this?
The Bible.
This is the good one. It's always back and forth. We were with the bad guys, now we're back to the good guys. All right, so chapter 18. Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy clothed with a linen ephod. No, I'm going to buy you guys an ephod so you can be stylish like Samuel. And his mother used to make for him a little robe and take it to him each year when she went up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Then Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, may the Lord give you, children by this woman for the petition she asked of the Lord. So then they would return to their home. Indeed, the Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and bore 3 sons and 2 daughters, and the boy Samuel grew in the presence of the Lord. All right, so here's a woman that could not have children, was barren, and was miserable. She was suffering because of this. She went and prayed. God blessed her with a child, and now since Samuel, because of her faithfulness in giving Samuel over to service of the Lord, she's been blessed with 5 more children. Remember, the other wife, Peninnah, was always making fun of her because she couldn't have children. Now she's got 5 in this amount of time. Just seems like back to back to back to back to back. Okay, so blessings are happening. All right, so We've got an inward and we've got an outward appearance. Samuel looks like a priest. Okay. He looks like a priest. Did I make a mistake?
Yes.
He looks like a priest because he wears the right clothes, and he also acts like a priest because he's ministering. The other guys look like priests, but they're not acting like priests. Okay, so it's one thing to look like a Christian, right? It's one thing to have outward appearances, but, I mean, the Pharisees were like that, right? What does Jesus say about them? Yeah, you guys are whitewashed tombs. You know, your mouth is like an open grave. You know, I mean, it's pretty severe.
Wait, so Samuel was able to perform sacrifices?
He's probably not sacrificing yet, but he's probably side by side with Eli as these things are going on. So he's. Yeah, and eventually eventually Samuel will step up and say things. He's still probably a little young for that, but it's coming. Yeah.
Wait, so like. Doesn't the high priest have to be from the line of Aaron?
Yes, or Levi, yeah.
How does, like, it just has to be, like, out of the tribe of Levi?
Yes.
Oh. I thought.
But it was. At this point, it's still Aaron's line. It's very much Aaron's line.
Wouldn't it have ended, like, here because him and his two sons
It's died? Going to, yeah. It's.
Stop skipping ahead.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's going to. I'll show you that in just a second. Yes, you're on it. All right, so ministering was ingrained in Samuel's lifestyle. And it's especially powerful considering its juxtaposition with the lives of those two dudes. Okay? So, those two dudes. All right. So, again, what the writer is doing is saying holy, unholy. Right? Faithful, unfaithful. Okay? Truthful, lying. He's putting them right beside each other over and over and over again. Okay, an ephod, that's an ephod right there, little picture right there. It's a sleeveless hip-length garment that only members of the tribe of Levi were authorized to wear. So, what? Yeah, then you get all kinds of special stuff. That's right. Too much talking. All right, and his mother, that is kind of a sweet little story, right? Every year his mother comes to visit him and brings him a robe, a nice little present. So I think what it tells you is that even though Samuel's no longer in her house, he's very much in his mother's heart, in her mind. She thinks about him. She prays for him. She brings him gifts every year. It's not like she dropped him off and is never going to see him again. There is a relationship every year. Yeah.
We didn't have this stuff where we tell our moms, the
moral
of the story is, leave the house, still give us gifts.
There you go.
That's the moral of the story.
Hey, and here's the thought. I think it's evident that Hannah is a mother with great faith, and she has a massive impact on the life of her son. Okay, now I can't relate to that. Okay, I can't relate to that whatsoever. But I think I want you to kind of think about this. If you have a faithful, praying mother, then you're blessed. Okay? You have something that a lot of people don't have. And it's the same thing with a father, but in this case we're talking about a mother. If you've got a mother that prays for you and is faithful, then you've got something that a lot of people don't have. And Samuel, I think, gets a lot of his, you know, his faithfulness, his willingness to minister through his mother. I mean, she comes up every year and gives him a robe. She prays for him. She did this. How faithful is it to say, I'm going to give my son to service of the temple? And at 3 years old, or wherever he is, she drops him off at the temple and lets him serve the Lord. I mean, do you think that was an easy day? I mean, you know, it's one of those things, you know, we can all make promises in stressful moments, and then when it comes down to it, we're like, oh, okay, Lord, do I really have to do that? You know, she does it. And I think she's a great example for Samuel and what he does. All right, so again, she has many children. Blessings have multiplied for Hannah. Samuel grew in the presence of the Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, literally, he grew with Yahweh. Okay, he grew with Yahweh. That's what it says literally. And I think the writer is doing something here, because in Exodus 34, when Moses was on the mountain with God, it said that he was there with Yahweh. And then in Psalm 130, it says, for with Yahweh there is steadfast love, and with him is plentiful redemption. So I think the writer is trying to make a parallel between Moses and Samuel. You know, Samuel is kind of the new Moses. He's going to be the new intercessor. He's going to be the new one to lead the nation. Because really, we haven't had a great leader in Israel since Joshua. Right? We've had some, you know, judges do some things, but most of those dudes were pretty messed up. Okay, they weren't exactly what they needed. So Samuel's going to be that new Moses. All right, so now, The Lord's going to decide what to do with Hoffman and Phineas. Yes. All right. Can't boo the heel. Come on. All right. So, 22 through 25. Now, Eli was very old, and he kept hearing all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who were serving at the entrance of the tent of the meeting. So this just got worse. All right, they were eating fat, they were doing corrupt sacrifices, now they're hooking up with women at the temple. Hey, now, were these... There's a question about what's going on here. Either way, it's not good. But the two possibilities are, there were many times women were given, just like Samuel was, there were women that were given to service in the temple. Think like Jephthah in Judges, which I think is what he was talking about. They're given to full-time service, okay? And so maybe they're sleeping with those women. That's bad. It might be even worse, and it may be the fact that they're bringing pagan cult prostitutes into the temple and laying with them too. So this could be bad, or it could be horrendously bad. Either way, it's not good, right? So they're pretty corrupt. And he said to them, Eli says to his sons, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all these people. No, my sons, it is no good report that I hear the people of the Lord spreading abroad. If someone sins against a man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death." How about that? It was the will of the Lord for them to die. And they didn't listen because God didn't want them to listen. Eli's giving them good advice, but God said, nope, they're not going to hear you because they're going to die. Yeah.
Kind of like how Pharaoh...
Very much so. Right? You know, Pharaoh hardens his heart, and God hardens his heart. You know, even when he's supposed to listen, God doesn't let him listen. Same thing with Jesus with the Pharisees and stuff. Right? I don't want them to listen right now. You remember when he does the parables? We've talked about that before.
He told them no one can hurt.
Yeah. Why? You know, the disciples go to him and are like, "Lord, what are you talking about? I don't understand why you're speaking like this all of a sudden." And he says, "Because if I don't, they might believe." How about that? I don't want them to believe. They're not supposed to believe. So I'm going to speak in this way. You know, it's the one I always bring up is you hear these preachers. I read an article the other day, and they were like, we should speak in illustrations because Jesus spoke in illustrations, and he spoke in these wonderful parables. And I was like, do you read why he spoke in the parables? He spoke in the parables so people wouldn't understand what he was saying. It's the dumbest example of all that, you know? I've given you an example before. It'd be like Pastor Sean getting up in the pulpit and being like, so there was this man. And he woke up in the morning, and he had breakfast, and he shaved, and took a shower. And he went to work, and he had some lunch, and he worked that whole afternoon. He worked really hard, and then he came home, and he had dinner, and he played with his kids, and then he went to bed. Think about that.
I get it.
That's what Jesus did with the parables, you know? There was this farmer, and he spread the seed, and some of the seed was on, you know, on good soil, and some of the seed was on rocky soil, and some of the seed was on this soil, and some of it grew, and the rest of them died. Think about that. Do you think everybody was like, oh, that's a brilliant picture of salvation? No, they weren't. Because all the disciples went, what are you talking about? And Jesus said, sit down, I'll explain it to you. And they were like, oh, now I get it. But they got personal interpretation. Nobody else got the personal interpretation. So sometimes God doesn't want you to understand. You know, there are things in the Bible that as an unbeliever, you're not going to understand. And as a believer, you're like, now it makes total sense. Okay? We talk about election all the time, right? A non-believer is not going to understand election. A believer might not, but at least you got a chance if you're a believer. Okay? All right. So Eli warns his sons, but the Lord has already determined to put them to death. And the Lord is righteous, and he will unwaveringly defend his word. If you're going to corrupt his word, you might want to watch out. Okay? I've been telling my Sunday school class because we've been going through 1 Kings. God's judgment is not always immediate, but it's inevitable. Might not happen the next day, but it's going to happen. Justice will be served. It may take years for it to happen, but justice will be served. And that's what we see here. Okay? And if we go back to Judges, we see this exact thing happen with Abimelech. And God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, and the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. And thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. If you remember, a woman drops a stone on his head And then he's like, I don't want a woman to have killed me, so somebody stab me. And then his buddy stabs him so he doesn't have to say a woman killed him.
That's so sexist.
Drops a stone off the tower. All right. So check this out. Eli rebukes his sons. So we're like, all right, good job, Eli. You're a father. You rebuked your sons when they weren't acting right. But notice it doesn't come until he's very old. Do you think these guys just started this yesterday? They've been acting out for years and years. And finally, he has said something. Shh. Okay. He waits until it's too late before he says anything. I think it's very clear that he says it wasn't until Eli was very old that he starts speaking up. So the writer's implying that Eli has been doing what?
Slack and watch.
Yeah. He's been turning a blind eye to it. He's been letting it go. Or at the very worst, Eli might be participating in this. Okay? Now, it doesn't say that explicitly, but I think there may be some truth to that, that he may be participating in some of this. So at best case scenario, he's the high priest and he's letting it slide in his own, in the tabernacle. Worst case scenario, he's participating in this, and finally his conscience is coming around, and he's saying, maybe we should stop doing this. And his sons are so far gone, they're like, forget it, Dad. We're not listening to you anymore. So how wicked have they become? Well, not now they're hooking up with women at the tabernacle complex. I mean, it doesn't get much more wicked than that. Okay? And we read earlier that eating the fat was a capital offense. Well, if you commit adultery, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. So they've committed two capital offenses now. I think God's going to render some justice here. It was the will of the Lord can also be translated, the Lord was pleased. Okay? It was the will of the Lord that they died. Now, that doesn't mean God's like, yeah, they're dead. That's not how God thinks. But at the same time, it pleases the Lord to serve justice. Okay? Justice must be done because he is just, right? The Lord doesn't take pleasure in killing people, but it's certainly true that he delights in bringing justice. And divine justice always brings satisfaction. All right. Now, even somebody that's a killer, it's not like we would, you know, and think about like the worst case scenario. Think like an Osama bin Laden kind of thing. Okay. Now, we kind of celebrated a little bit when he got killed, right? You know, there was kind of a celebration there. But it wasn't necessarily just because of the death. There was so much more going on there, right? There's justice being served. He deserved death, right, for what he did. He deserved a lot worse than death, and he's probably getting it. Right? So we have no worries about that. But it's not a joy because he took a bullet to the head. It's a joy because justice was served. Right? That's why we get excited about a story like that. Not because we're excited that somebody's died, but we're excited that justice has been served. That's what we need to grab onto here. So, real quick, there's one verse right here in between these verses, and look what it says. Now the boy Samuel continued to grow both in stature and in favor with the Lord and also with man. So all this stuff about Eli and his wicked sons, and then one verse says, meanwhile, while these dirtbags were doing all this stuff, Samuel is growing in favor, in stature, and in favor with the Lord and also with man. And that should sound a little bit familiar because in Luke 2, it says, and Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. When Jesus was a young man in the temple, he did the exact same thing Samuel did. So maybe Samuel's a bit of a Christ figure. Yeah. Good woo. I like it. Okay. All right. Here comes judgment. We got a long section. Well, I had to get it all on one slide. It was difficult.
I can't.
Yes. All right. Let's finish this section. And there came a man of God, a prophet, to Eli and said to him, thus the Lord has said, did I indeed reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt, subject to the house of Pharaoh? Did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? I gave to the house of your father all my offerings by fire from the people of Israel. Why then do you scorn my sacrifices and my offerings that I commanded and honor your sons above me by fattening yourselves on the choicest parts of every offering of my people of Israel? Notice fattening yourselves, all of you. Therefore, the Lord, the God of Israel, declares, I promise that your house and the house of your father should go in and out before me forever. But now the Lord declares, far be it from me, for those who honor me I will honor, and those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days are coming when I will cut off your strength and the strength of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house. Then in distress you will look with envious eye on all the prosperity that shall be bestowed on Israel, and there shall not be an old man in your house forever. The only one of you whom I shall not cut off from my altar shall be spared to weep his eyes out, to grieve his heart, and all the descendants of your house shall die by the sword of men. This is getting worse and worse verse for Eli. And this that shall come upon your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, shall be the sign to you. Both of them shall die on the same day. And I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who shall do according to what is in my heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall go in and out before my anointed forever. And everyone who is left in your house shall come to implore him for a piece of silver or a loaf of bread, and shall say, please put me in one of the priest's places that I may eat a morsel of bread. Okay? So a prophet shows up, a man of God, and he lays out a litany of crimes that Eli has committed against the Lord. And even though it's clear that his sons are guilty, this prophet implicates Eli as well. Well, why might we think that Eli was also doing this? Well, we'll see this when we get to chapter 4. But when the two boys die, it says Eli fell over backward from his seat by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for the man was old and heavy. Well, why is the priest a big fat guy? Okay, because he's eating all the stuff. Okay, a priest shouldn't be overweight, shouldn't be heavy. But apparently, he goes out of his way to say this guy was heavy, and that's why his neck broke, because he fell on himself. But maybe the reason why is because he's eating all that fat. You know? He was eating fat, and he got, I don't think there were too many overweight Israelites walking around the desert, and all they had were carbs, and they still, I don't think they were overweight. We've got this overweight priest. You know, it's kind of like the, if you walk into a room and you got the big overweight preacher, aren't you like, come on, dude? It's like I always thought, coaching wise, if you had to play for a guy that was like this big overweight guy and he was like, you guys are lazy, I'd be like, coach, come on.
Temple?
I mean, you just can't do that. You gotta represent something better than that. So we've got a broken contract. The sins of Eli and his sons were a breach of contract with God, and so God's no longer bound by the terms of agreement. Why is this different than the new covenant? Because what's our contract with God? Yeah, we put faith in Christ, and He honors it. We're still going to sin, right? We still have moments. We still have bad things. And yet, He honors that promise. It's unconditional. Back then, like the Mosaic Covenant and all that, the Abrahamic Covenant, all that's conditional, right? Because if you bless me, I will bless you. And if you curse me, I'll curse you. As long as you follow my statutes, as long as you listen to my laws, as long as you do what you need to do, walk in my ways, you'll be here forever. But as soon as you don't, it's on. Enemy armies are going to come in, take you out. You're not going to be here long. There'll be a stumbling block for you. Okay? So here's our ending here. Okay? The current generation of Eli's family is going to suffer penalties. Eli's going to witness distress in the Lord's dwelling. Hophni and Phinehas are going to die on the same day. All right? And future generations of Eli's family are going to suffer penalties. They would persistently experience untimely deaths so that men who lived to old age would not be found in Eli's descendants. Now, why is it a big deal that there will never again be old men in Eli's house?
I don't know.
Why is that important?
Isn't old life considered a blessing back in that time?
Yeah, I mean, think about elders. What is the value of having elders in your house?
Wisdom,
right? Guidance. They get to grow up and watch their sons and daughters grow up into mature people. And he says, you're never going to have old men in your house. They're going to die by the sword. And you're going to see, we'll see it in these books. These men are just going to die young and they're not going to make it. There's not going to be any heritage to all that. There's something about that idea. So let me get to the end here and we'll be there. All right.
How long does that go?
Forever. As far as we know, as far as the guys we know that are from his line, we'll see it several times where they're going to kick off early and not make it to old age. Yeah. So here's our idea. Samuel serves the Lord and is blessed. Eli's sons despise the Lord and are cursed. That's Abrahamic covenant, straight there. Prophecies of judgment are delivered, and they're absolutely going to come to pass. So next week, we will pick up in chapter 3 where the Lord calls Samuel. And then after that, Eli and his sons aren't going to hang out much longer because it's all going down at Shiloh.
It's going down.
Y'all are really lame. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for tonight, Lord. Thank you for this time in your word. Help us to understand what it means to be a living sacrifice, to put you first in all things that we do, to not let pride get in our way and prevent us from doing those sorts of things, because we are prideful people, Lord. We do put things ahead of you, and I pray that we would be convicted of that and serve you always. Help us to be better. Help us to be more loving followers of you. Only you can remove these things from our heart, Lord, that get in the way. Help us to praise you more as we move about in our daily business and be those living sacrifices. Bless us and keep us as we go. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, guys.